Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Hey, y'all. I'm Jackie, and I'm an alcoholic. So thanks for letting me be here, by the way. I'm really grateful to be sitting up here, and I love talking about step 10, which is what we're going to do now. So up until this point, you know, and Tarek just finished talking about steps 8 and 9, where, you know, we've worked these steps, you know, we've admitted powerlessness in step 1, you know, we've come to believe in a God of our understanding, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God, and then taken some actions, right? You know, we took some actions in writing an inventory and sitting down with another person and getting real, you know, getting transparent with another person and with God about our shortcomings, and then gone out into the world again, you know, and repaired the damage that we caused as a result of our selfishness and self-centeredness. And so that brings us to step 10, right? And at this point, we've entered back into the world of the Spirit, you know, and that's what step 10 is all about. It's like step 10 is the step that, you know, I probably turn to the most these days. And it's, you know, this is the design for living. This is the instructions for life. And I love how, you know, step 10 is only on these two pages in the book, on page 84 and 85. And, like, all the instructions that I need to live are right in this one little short paragraph on page 84. You know, the wording of the step is that we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. As a result of working the steps up until this point, you know, we've learned these tools in which to live. And so step 10 just kind of wraps it up real nicely so that, you know, we know what to do because we've learned what to do as a result of the process up to this point. I want to read this instructional paragraph and point out, you know, some important things in there. Do you have anything to say?
No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah. So on page 84, it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. It's, you know, this is not a one and done type of deal. It's like, I don't just work the steps and then I'm done and, like, I'm good and there's no more growth at that point, right? This is the step that's going to teach me that I have to continue to look at, you know, what comes up on a daily basis. And then, you know, it's going to tell me exactly what I need to do when that happens. And it says, we vigorously, strong word there, commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So, you know, we've just talked about these 9-step amends, and Tarek mentioned and talked about how, you know, that's a process that might occur over some time. So as we're in that process, you know, we're going to be practicing this 10th step. And really, you know, I like to teach people to go ahead and start living this way from the get-go before you're even at that point. It says we have entered the world of the Spirit. So up until, you know, the time that I've worked the steps, I've not been consciously connected to my Creator. And as a result of doing the inventory and going out and making these amends, it's like, you know, I now have this conscious contact with God. And in order to grow that relationship, you know, which is ever changing for me, it's like, you know, what the way that I felt about my Creator right after working the steps the very first time has completely grown and changed, you know, over the years that I've been sober and continued to live this way of life. And, you know, I have to be open to that. It's like I can't stay set in a belief system that, you know, this is the experience that I had and, you know, that's the way that it just is. It's like I have to be open to letting this conception grow and change. And that's what this step is all about, is about growth. It says our next function is to grow. in understanding and effectiveness. It's like, if I am going to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness, then, you know, that's my purpose. It's like, I have to be able to, it's not about me anymore. It's like, I'm going to pass this on to the rest of the world. It's like, because my job is to take care of other people now and not be so concerned with myself. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. And that's like a wonderful thing, because, you know, now that I've learned to live this way, I have, you know, the possibilities are endless. You know, it's just an infinite amount of, you know, grace that I can engage in on a daily basis. And then we have an instruction here where it says to continue to watch. Watching is a spiritual action, you know. It's like, if I have to be able to be aware and watch for when selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear crop up. Okay? It's like, where have we heard that before? And when we do the inventory, you know, we learn that, you know, this is our problem, the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment, the fear. And so the instruction here is that we're going to continue to watch for those things. And then it says, when these crop up, not if, but when, you know, just because, you know, I'm now living this new way of life doesn't mean that I'm going to be free of selfishness, resentment, dishonesty, and fear at all times. You know, this stuff is going to crop up in my daily life. So when it does, it tells us four things to do. First, we pray. We ask God at once to remove them. Second, we discuss them with someone immediately. That's where that transparency and accountability thing comes back into play that we talked about in the fifth step. You know, Lindsay and Jamie talked a long time about how important it is to be transparent with other people, because if left to my own devices, if I'm just mulling shit over in my head, like, that's not going to be effective, because I don't have the ability to see the reality of a situation without bouncing it off of somebody else. And if I can lose that fear of what people think of me enough to be honest about, you know, where I've screwed up, there's so much freedom in facing that fear. And then it says we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. And then we turn our thoughts quickly to someone we can help. And, you know, it's like, I do this. I often forget, like, if my day has gotten off track and, you know, it's the end of the day and it's just a complete shit show and I'm like all in my head and there's all this crazy stuff going on. If I look back and it's like, oh, well, I didn't do these things. You know, I didn't ask God to remove that stuff, and I didn't call somebody immediately, and I didn't make amends where I fucked up, and I didn't turn my attention to where someone I could help. I just was mired in self all day long, right? And so I typically will go back at that point and try to clean up this big old mess that I made. And, you know, it's so much more effective when I can remember that if I can go through my day and practice this stuff as I go along, that's the space that I need to be in. And then it says love and tolerance of others is our code. Never before, when I was using, was love and tolerance of others my code. But if I can remember that simple thing, then really everything is okay. And that's what I love about this paragraph. It's like, it's so short. It's right here in the middle of page 84. And if I can do these things right here in this paragraph, then everything is okay. You know, it's like, these are, it's very simple. I want to make this big, complicated deal out of life. And the reality is that I just have to follow these simple instructions and everything is fine. That's the reality.
Thanks, Jake. So, I've said this a couple of times. I think I said it yesterday, and I know I've said it today. But the steps are very circular and repetitive in terms of the overriding theme. So, in the first step, we have self-examination. Second step, we turn to God. Third step, I believe we turn out to other people. We provide our testimony. four and five, it's like we're in self-examination. And then the fifth step is our form of self-examination. When someone holds a mirror up, the other person listening to our fifth step is the mirror. Six and seven, we're turning to God. Eight and nine, we're turning to our fellows to restore the separation, remove the separation. Now in step 10 is self-examination. Now, I hear a lot of people talk about the 10th step as an inventory that they do at the end of the day. I write my daily inventory, my nightly inventory. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not judging it. It is just one way of doing a 10th step. I think a much more effective way of doing a 10th step is learning how to take an inventory of yourself as you walk throughout the course of the day. Because think about it. If what I said earlier was true and the first 9 steps are the launching pad into the world of the Spirit, which I believe is the language of the heart, which I also believe has its own language, well, we need to learn how to operate in that new world. It's like we walk up these set of stairs and the door opens and step 9 sort of gets us in the doorway and 10 and 11 sort of push us into the room. Okay? And the 10th step, to me, for me, and I think some people will agree with me, is by far the hardest step to practice. Watching or witnessing yourself throughout the course of a day, because we become so overly identified with our life and the responsibilities of our life and the overthinking and the self-judgment that goes on for us. In our little circle, we call it stage characters. So it's out of the big book. To the world, we present our stage characters. We actually believe they define who we are. So when something threatens our stage characters, we fight for our lives, right? Well, I've got to figure out a way to this is when disassociation is a good word. I need to find out a way to disassociate from that, right? They are not what defines me. And one of the ways that begins is with this idea of watch. So when I sponsor someone and I get them to the 10th step, when we get to the 10th step, the first thing they're going to do for 1 week is they're going to write the word watch on a note card, and they're going to put one in their pocket, they're going to put one on their nightstand, one in the on the mirror in the bathroom, one on the refrigerator, maybe one by the coffee maker, one on their dashboard in the car, and one at the office desk. Why? Because I want them to be aware of this. What my task is right now is to observe myself, to learn how to witness what's going on. How do different people in different situations affect me? Do they bring up fear, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, anxiety, depression, whatever it is? I'm just becoming a witness. And that's 1 week. And the second week, they get a new set of cards and they write the word watch/ask. Now look, in the back of the big book on page 568, it says that most of us believe that the essence of a spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. To me, I translate that, I simplify it into that's telling me I need to think about God as often as possible. So the 10th step incorporates this really beautiful way of starting to practice that. Okay, I'm witnessing, and then I go into a dialogue with my higher power. I ask, God, please remove my fear, direct my attention to what you'd have me be. God, I'm thinking about it. A lot of what I do when I'm practicing the 10th step is I'm trying to remember God. I'm trying to remember God in the moment. A lot of people think the word remember always means I got to remember from the past. But I'm talking about remembering right now, in the moment, that God is here. And the imagination is imperative here. You have to use your imagination to imagine that God is present with you. Okay? And that's watch and ask. That's new language for us if we can learn how to do that. In the third week, it's watch, ask, turn. Right, and then in the fourth week, I have changed cease fighting to breathe, because I believe in our breath we acknowledge the presence of God. So if I can become conscious of my breath in a moment, I'm literally becoming conscious of the presence of God, and that also requires your imagination. But that's a powerful practice that you can incorporate. Watch, ask, turn, cease, breathe. It's straight out of the big book, but that's what this is, you know. And then we have this other part of it that Jackie touched on, which discuss with someone immediately. There are times during the day where I get so afraid or so bent sideways that I'm back and forth. I'm going through the practice. I'm trying to close my eyes, take a deep breath, acknowledge the presence of God, and something's just got me warped. I need to bounce it off somebody. I need to share the experience and see what they share with me and what questions they ask me. Because what happens is that thins out the presence of the ego. Now, the ego is going to be present in every single thing any of us do for the rest of our lives, period. What changes is how thick the ego is in the presence
over the course of time, if you practice this, I promise you the presence of the ego will thin out compared to what it was in the past. And that's what this is just practice, right? Watch, ask, turn, discuss with someone immediately, make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. And if you do that, it forces you into an ongoing reflection. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I'll be on the phone with customer service. That's my Achilles heel, right? Customer service based out of another country. That is my Achilles heel right now. And I just have a huge problem with it. It just makes me boil.
Enraged.
And I can't tell you, because I'm in a reflection as I'm talking to this person, I will say something that I should not say. And literally like a few minutes later in the conversation, if they're helping me or something, I'll say, you know what? I totally didn't. You didn't deserve for me to say that to you. You know, I know you're just doing your job. I apologize, right?
They probably don't get that very often.
No. That is a 10-step practice, okay?
It's like when I think the longer that I continue to practice this 10th step, the easier it becomes to do, because, like, I become aware of when I'm not practicing the 10th step. Like, it's very, like, I guess the awareness of not practicing the 10th step is a lot more acute than when I am, because, you know, all of a sudden it's like, you know, things are not right. And, you know, I can't even describe that properly about what not right means, but I think y'all can all probably relate, you know. It's just like when shit's not going the right way. And it's like, but the longer I go along, it's like, that's not acceptable to me anymore. It's like, I don't want to be the one running around in the world causing chaos, which is what happens when I'm completely run by self. Because I'm like, when things are not going right, it's because Jackie has decided to propel herself through that day instead of allowing this space where, you know, it, like, the watching part is so important. And it's like, you know, that's the only time when it's like I'm involved. It's all I need to do is just watch for, you know, when these things crop up. And then it's, I turn to God and I turn to others. I turn to others to, you know, seek counsel and to be accountable and transparent. And then I turn to others to be helpful. Because, you know, that's ultimately the answer to everything. If I can turn to others and be helpful, you know, that's God's purpose for me as I go through my day. So, you know, it just, things go a whole lot better when I follow these instructions. And I love it that they're right there together. That makes it much simpler, I think. I'd like to read through the 10th step promises in their entirety.
I want to interject real quick for you.
Yes, please do.
So, you know, Jackie was talking about this idea of watch, and I mentioned the word witness. I think the spiritual path has, it demands reflection. And so there was a man in my life for years that I just thought was a spiritual giant. And I cared for him a lot, and he's probably one of the greatest teachers I've ever had. And if we don't reflect on how we interact with people, I think there's a huge component missing from our spiritual condition. And so what I witnessed is a lack of reflection. If we're doing something and we're interacting with people in such a way that it's leaving chaos behind us, and people are sharing the experience they had with said individual, and it's not, they were hurt by it, but there's no reflection going on by the person. So to me, I mentioned the spiritual barometers. How do my relationships, are they, you know, I know I'm going to hurt people. I know I'm going to do stupid, goofy stuff, but I do the best I can to restore it so we can keep moving forward and continue to, like, build. And what I saw in this man that I love with all my heart was no reflection, none. But he will sing from the rooftop that he is spiritual and he's trying to help people. But you can't do both. And you can't be on a spiritual path, in my opinion, and want to help people and not reflect on how your character is showing up. And I'll be the first to tell you, I hurt people. Every time I go through the steps, in sobriety, I have somewhere between 6 to 10 amends I have to make. Just from like the past 9 to 12 months where I've shown my ass. Okay? And this time was way more. Because I had a marriage that ended, I lost my father, and I was a train wreck, completely seeking things, right? And wanting to distract myself from a grief process, and so I was trying to do things that would keep me from having to really do the internal work that had to be done. And that's just what happened. So there was a struggle. People would call, oh, he's living in self-will and character defects. Whatever it is, I was able to go places with certain people in my life on conversations that were really beneficial to my growth and who I am as a human, but based on reflection. And the 10th step affords you a way to reflect. Watch, witness, dialogue with God, discuss with someone immediately about how you're showing up, and then fix something if you break something, and then learn how to practice a code of love and tolerance. And look, the code of love and tolerance is not with other people all the time. It's with yourself. Mm-hmm. So much of this process is to learn how to be gentle on yourself. I've had a significant problem with this over my 11 years. And the overthinking and the over-identification leads to self-judgment, and I beat myself up. And that is dangerous for alcoholics and addicts, more so than a lot of other people in the human race. But now we're afforded with a method that allows us to examine ourselves and watch ourselves and witness and dialogue, all of which are very important if you want to grow spiritually.
And, you know, that's, and touching on what you just said, too, like, it's so important to know that, like, we're never going to get this exactly perfectly right. Like, we're never, ever, ever going to, you know, 100% know what we're doing all the time and walk through life in a perfect manner. And, you know, that's why this step is here. Because I don't have to be perfect, but I often expect that of myself. And, you know, I get so caught up in the fact that I'm not perfect and then beat myself up for it. That, and like you said, the love and tolerance, that's where that comes in too. So I like that you said that. All right, let's read through these promises that are so amazing. And then we'll just kind of talk about our experience with those promises. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol or drugs. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor or drugs. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor and drugs has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So, you know, it starts off talking about that we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. And that has absolutely been my experience, because not only did I fight against the alcohol for me, but I was constantly in battle within myself and with others. And I found that, you know, once I got sober, one of the very first things that I noticed was this lack of fighting. You know, the lack of fighting in so many different areas. So that was like one of the first things that I noticed had come true for me. These promises are describing what happens as a result of taking the actions up to this point. It's like when I came into this deal and I started the step process, I never believed that I thought that I'd be white knuckling it for the rest of my life, you know? That, okay, yeah, I've stopped drinking for now, only because I went to rehab for 30 days and I couldn't drink. And they're telling me now I got to get a sponsor and work steps, but okay, whatever. But I know that I'm going to be white-knuckling it for the rest of my life. But if I have to do that, okay, whatever. So it was like all of a sudden, you know, after a certain amount of time, I can't even tell you the exact amount of time, but it was approximately 2 to 3 months, I woke up one day and the desire to drink was no longer there. And it wasn't even like it was that sudden of a realization. It was gone. And like at some point, and I can't tell you when, I realized that I didn't want to drink anymore. And, you know, luckily there are people in my life to point out to me, well, that's what happens, Jackie. You know, it's like you stop drinking, you work these steps, and you are now in this space that God has allowed. You know, you have entered the world of the Spirit, and as a result, the obsession has been removed. And that's what we're describing here, because, you know, it says that it's happened automatically. They will see our new attitude has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. You know, we're not fighting it, not white-knuckling it anymore. Neither are we avoiding temptation. I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. What a wonderful, wonderful space that is. And it's like it's something I never, ever believed could happen. And it did.
You guys ever given any thought, if you've read these promises around what she just read, has been given to us without very little thought and effort on our part, it just comes automatically? What's the thought and effort been placed on throughout this whole process? It's not alcohol and it's not drugs, is it?
That's right.
After the first step is something totally different. It's investigating your ideas about God.
Mm-hmm.
It's investigating your commitment or your degree to commit. And then everything else is, are you willing to do this? Are you willing to do this? Are you willing to do that? And step 7 at the end of the day, that's really about the spirituality of imperfection. I need God. That's all I'm acknowledging in the 7th step is I need God. I have poverty when it comes to God. And I hope I always do. Thank God for my defects, because they're always going to keep me in a position where I need God.
Yep.
Position of neutrality, you guys remember the story I told last night about sitting in my office and the intellectual sorting out process that I had to go through? You know, I would get the idea of a 20 rock on the end of my stem, and then I'd have to go, oh, it's not a good idea, I got to pay these bills, blah, blah, blah. That was the intellectual sorting out process, but at some point it wasn't available to me. So in other words, my willpower wasn't available to me. What the position of neutrality is in regards to drugs and alcohol is I never have to even come close to that process. The illusion that I have ever had a choice has completely been eradicated. It's gone. I never, you know, now, like where I live, I can sort of like, I live in Decatur, and I used to hang out on Boulevard and North Avenue, right? And I could envision like what's happening on the corner and like where I used to cop and the crack houses I used to hang out with or the rooming houses I used to stay in. And I would get this vision of a crack rock on a stem. And then I just close my eyes and I acknowledge my breath. And I don't even have to say a prayer anymore. Whatever God is just sort of comes in and keeps me safe and protected. That's what happens. Did I think that was possible when I was sitting where you're sitting? That thought never crossed my mind. But what was possible was to see the gift that had been given to me, because I was doing things I would not do before, like following the instructions. Every instruction that Randy and Dante gave me was a spiritual experience. Because, and this is in reflection, when I was in it, all I did was say, yes, sir, and I did it. But looking back on the way I lived my life up to that point and how I was showing up at that time, that is a spiritual experience. Because with my track record, I don't do that shit.
Right.
I don't say yes, sir, and complete an assignment and call someone up and say, I'm ready to keep going. It didn't make any sense. The steps don't make any sense. Everything that made sense never worked. The one thing that makes no sense actually works. Right? Your therapist and your case managers at whatever program you're at are going to tell you a bunch of shit that makes sense. You're like, that makes sense. You mean if I take this pill, I won't be depressed, and if I'm not depressed, I'm not going to get high. It makes perfect sense, right? Does not work.
Nope.
Does not work.
The only solution that we have here is a power greater than myself. That's the only solution. It's, you know, up into, you know, prior attempts to get sober were wrought with, you know, ideas that I had about how to keep myself sober. You know, I tried many, many different things. You know, of me managing and manipulating and controlling my life and my experiences so that if I just do this, then I'll be able to stay sober. And until I reached a point where I admitted that I, no matter what I tried, it wasn't going to work. And maybe, just maybe, this God thing that you speak of might work. and I'm out of options, so I guess I'm going to try that because I don't have anything else done. So as the steps that I've worked, you know, have not been about attempts to manage, control, and manipulate my experiences with alcohol. The steps that I've worked have been about gaining access to the power that I need in my life, because I don't have any. I don't have any power, and I've admitted that, right? And I've made a decision that I'm going to try to hook up with this power. And that's happened, and that's what we're talking about here on these pages. You know, we're now in the position where we've hooked up with power. And as a result, the problem has been removed. Not because of anything I've done. The only thing that I've done has been, I've been humble enough and willing enough and open-minded enough and all those things to have an experience with the power. And as a result of that, the power has removed the problem. Not me. Not me. So, that's that. Do you have anything more on that?
Hey, one second. I used to, when I got a new sponsee, I used to start them on steps 10 and 11. And then it was pointed out to me that the 10th step refers to someone that is sane.
Yeah.
So I no longer give any 10-step practices to someone that's early, in early recovery. I do give them prayer and meditation practices. But I don't give them any of what I'm talking to you right now about watch and witness and ask and turn and breathe. None of that. Not at the beginning. Because we've got to clear away some room to create the capacity to even practice that. And that's what the first 9 steps are really about. They're going to give you enough room where this idea of, oh, I can observe myself. And maybe while I'm observing myself, there's this other presence that's with me. Right? You can't tell someone fresh off the street that, right, what I just said to you. Then they're going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? This is way too weird. I'm sharing that with you now because I'm trying to excite one person or two people in this room. See,
this is what's available.
Yeah, the majority of you aren't going to remember a damn thing from this weekend. You may have a 2 or 3 day residual effect, and then it's gone for whatever reason. And the part of me is I'm fucking with you guys right now. I'm gonna share you why. So this young girl that I love with all my heart, she was sitting out at, we were at $3 cafe, and she was talking about this inventory that she would not write. Right, and I said to her, I remember she was sitting down on the speed bump, and I said, "Look, maybe you're just not done." Right, and I don't know if it was a combination of her being scared and her saying, "Who the fuck does this guy think he is? Fuck you! I'm going to show you. I'm going to go home and write my inventory right now." Right, and she did something along those lines. Right, so me sitting up here and telling me, saying these somewhat derogatory things to y'all, what's going to happen to y'all? I'm trying to get you pissed,
right?
And prove me wrong.
Exactly.
Prove me wrong. You know, it works in some cases. I wish it worked in more cases, but my experience says that this is going to produce a very tiny effect, just like the third step, unless you do something
follow
after this
up
weekend.
By action. Right. So these promises end, you know, in that top paragraph with a condition that this is how it can be. This is how we react. So long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So the next paragraph here is going to give us a warning. And it talks about, it says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels or our past achievements. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol and drugs are a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism or addiction. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. So, you know, it's like, and that's been my experience. It's like, I've really treaded into some dangerous territory with some years sober under my belt where, you know, it's like I've been given this miracle where, you know, an alcoholic like me does not get to be in a space where I don't desire to drink alcohol anymore. Yet I was given that wonderful, you know, space of grace, yet I still am going to let up on my spiritual program of action, you know? because I think to myself, you know, well, I've done this and I'm just fine, and all these crazy ideas that I tell myself. And you know, the truth is that, you know, every day, every single day, like, is brand new. You know, it doesn't matter what I did yesterday. It makes no difference whatsoever. It's like, am I going to wake up today and do everything that I can to seek God today? Because if I don't, then this space that they talk about in the 10th step promises can go away. Because I am not cured of alcoholism and addiction. You know, it's like the obsession has been removed, but I'm still an alcoholic. And you know, it's like that's where you get into that recovering versus recovered argument, where, you know, I'm recovered because the obsession has been removed, but I'm still an alcoholic because I have the allergy of the body, and that is in me, and it always will be. So I'm going to die an alcoholic. I will die as an alcoholic, but I don't have to die from alcoholism, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And where it talks about every day is a day where I must follow the vision of God's will, it's like when you hear this, like, one day at a time thing, like, that's what one day at a time is to me. You know, it's like that every day is a day where I have to carry the vision of God's will. And I'm sure Tarek's going to talk to you about vision work a little bit.
Not
you're not? No. You always talk about that.
I don't.
Not tonight. I'm putting words in his mouth. But it's like, if you know, it's not about like white knuckling it one day at a time. It's about that every day, if I can get up and do this deal and help God's kids and, you know, get in, you know, proper alignment with God's will, then I'm going to stay safe and protected every day, each day, right?
Oh, can I interject real quick?
Yes, you may.
So, you know, if you go to meetings, this is going to get into prayer and meditation, but it's not really intended to, but who in here prays? Almost every hand goes up, right? Who in here prays and meditates? Okay, half the hands are up. Who here prays and meditates and knows how to work with the vision work? Okay, same thing happens in the rooms. And I used to be really into this practice of scripting. I have all these journals of, like, I would create a vision for what I want this area in my life to look like. And I don't remember when it happened, a year or two ago, and I totally stopped with that. Because it was engaging my cognitive thinking process too much. And I was literally trying to create life the way I wanted it. And that's just not something I prescribe to anymore. I just don't. Whatever God wants to do and live out through this little locus of existence here is okay with me. That's the way I want to live my life. And I don't care what that looks like. I really don't. My responsibilities, I am responsible for everything that gets lived out. But I'm not responsible. Go think about that for a minute. And so where I do use vision work is when I have to make a decision where I'm forced to sit with it. And then I will think about, well, if I make this decision, let's create a vision, and I want to see how it affects my body. Okay, and I don't want to get into prayer and meditation too much, but that's where I use the vision work, right? So, but there's all kinds of cool things out there. Jackie could probably share with you her vision work. I did it for years. Did I get things out of it? Yeah, sure. I might be doing it 4 years from now. But the thing is to be flexible here, right? Don't be so rigid and you get to one thing and it's the be all and the end all, because then you're gonna really suffer behind that at some point.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about is resting in all laurels. Don't freak out because you're all going to do it, because we've done it.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. You're going to reach a place that is called the dark night of the soul, right? Don't talk to a Catholic priest about dark nights of the soul, because they're only reserved for saints, so they may look at you all weird. But I think dark nights of the soul happen for everybody, okay? And the dark night is that place for me when I get to where meditation doesn't produce anything. Prayers seem to evaporate off my tongue. The world and its pleasures seem quite empty. Then turning to God seems just as empty. Mm-hmm. And I'm left in this place called the desert. I call it the desert. and we're all going to reach it. And the good news is, on the other side of it, you're actually going to move to another station in your spiritual evolution. But when you're in it, you're never going to think that. But that's what's going to happen over and over. That's when I love the old thing of peeling the onion. I don't like a lot of slogans, but I love that one because I think that's literally what happens here. Yeah. Layer after layer after layer. And, I mean, the 10th step, when you hear it in a meeting, oh, I need to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, I need to promptly admit it. And, I mean, a lot of people focus on promptly admitting when you're wrong, and that's the gist of it. There's so much more to this 10th step. You can take, like, one sentence that we've talked about and do literally an entire workshop on it. Right? What is it to enter the world of the Spirit? Have you ever led a meeting with that type of discussion topic? You know, what is the sixth sense? That's some really cool stuff that you can actually have some fun with. It's much more than just admitting when I'm wrong. Okay, that's part of it. It's a part of it.
I don't know what else I have right now.
I've got something.
Okay, go.
So earlier I talked about cease fighting and breathing. This is something I've been giving people. I've been taking through the steps when they get to this step. It says, another rule formulated by spiritual aspirants is awareness and breathing, or what we call conscious breathing. What does it mean to breathe consciously? Spiritual aspirants have always maintained that each moment which passes, and I'm putting some words in there, it really says spiritual masters, have always maintained that each moment which passes in which God has not been remembered is a wasted moment. The breath in a human connects us with the divinity of life. In the constant flow of inhaling and exhaling, and especially in that almost imperceptible, that you can't really see that pause between inhaling and exhaling, a vibrating model of two worlds is in access. We live in one world that presents itself, and then when we take the breath and we exhale, we reemerge into the same world, but from a different state. We introvert into our inner recesses in order to extrovert again and share life in its external fullness from a new station. That's what breathing can do. But think about it, guys. How often do you become mindful of your breath in the course of a day? Literally, we don't even know there's something breathing for us. Some people think it's the body, right? Some people believe the heart is just a muscle. I don't. There's more to it than that. There's a spiritual heart involved here.
Yeah.
And through this step, you can incorporate all kinds of cool things into it. It's much deeper than it looks on the surface, right?
It is much deeper than it appears on the surface, and it grows and changes. I think I've said that like 5 times since I've been up here in an hour, but like that's been so crucial for me to understand. And I think that's part of the resting on my laurels thing, is that, like, you know, if I still relied upon the exact same beliefs that I had, you know, on day one as I do today, or if I still practiced exactly the same way that I did on day one as I do today, then, you know, that is, how is there any growth in that? It's like, you know, I become open-minded and willing enough to try something different in the beginning, you know? It's like, for the first time, I'm like, okay, I give up. I'm going to do it this way. You know, I'll do what you say. I'll do what you say. You know, we become, you know, our ego becomes deflated enough. We're able to do that. And it's like, it's so important to maintain that level of humility, you know, with spiritual practice, because if I close my mind off to new ideas just because I think I know, then I'm just missing out on so much. You know, it's like I've come to learn so many different ways to practice spiritual principles and to know God in different ways. And I'm so glad that I've had all of those experiences, and I hope that I continue to have more and that I can stay open-minded enough to have more. I just think that's so important, you know? I really do. It's been so important for me.
We need to have a way to stay awake. Isn't it the new thing for young people, stay woke?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That's right.
you know, they've taken a very difficult practice and now materialized it in like into this like mainstream thing of
right.
like stay woke, and like I wonder how many of them know what the hell that means.
I know. I didn't even know it was a thing. At first I thought it was like a thing in the rooms.
Yeah.
I really did. I don't know.
So how do we stay woke? This is the step. This is how you stay awake.
That's right. This is stay woke.
No, this is it. a friend of mine wrote this article. The 10th step, as discussed in the Big Book, is not just about taking inventory once a day. It's about taking our own inventory constantly as we walk through the day. It's as if we were above ourselves, watching ourselves, having a human experience, making the mistakes that all humans make. The difference between other humans and us is that we have run out of choices whether or not we seek God's power. The truth revealed out of our experience with powerlessness and unmanageability has removed the options of our lives run on quote-unquote self-will and self-reliance. We are without choice. Therefore, the 10th step is vitally important to the continuing awareness that we need to grow in understanding the spirit world and effectiveness in the human world.
Yeah.
The first 9 steps are the launching pad into the spiritual dimensions of steps 10, 11, and 12. The 10th step is about staying woke and present in my daily life. Several spiritual practices are embedded in this step. We can take any one of them and practice it for months. Watch. We observe our internal space and we look for resentment, fear, selfishness, and dishonesty. When these crop up, we ask. They may not be removed at months, but our task is just to ask. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone or we can help, or we turn our thoughts to the task at hand. When we fall asleep and harm someone, we try to make amends quickly. We practice a code of love and tolerance. We cease fighting alcohol, drugs, people, and circumstances. All suffering is resistance to what is. This step allows us to see this and practice a moment-by-moment surrender. By far, the 10th step is the most difficult one to practice, but the results are magnificent. We experience the greatest promise in the Big Book, the position of neutrality. We stop fighting. True humility emerges. But the 10th step does not stop there. The authors of the Big Book believed in vision work. They state on page 85, every day is a day we must carry a vision of God's will into all our activities. This is the proper use of the will. Most people in the rooms pray. Some pray and meditate, but very few pray, meditate, and work with a vision. With these practices, the possibilities are limitless. Our responsibility is to develop these spiritual skills so we can grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's all I got.
Yeah. Are we good?
I think we're good, Miles. Wherever you are. All right. Thank you. Let's say you're struggling at work. You got a few people that you work with that are getting on your nerves, and you really don't like the way they affect you. So when I used to do vision work, I had a journal. I would write, you know, at work I am patient and tolerant of my colleagues. I go to work to be of service, not to make money. I add value. I am confident of my coworkers. You see what I'm saying? So you're just like writing a bunch of I am statements, and then as you're writing, you're trying to like picture it in your head, right? And then the next day, I would come back and I'd look at what I wrote the next day before, and I would try to have a vision and try to be, I'll try to envision the emotion that attaches to me being what I'm writing. That's how you work with it. Other people I know, like, well, like for me, when I'm meditating on a decision, I'll create a vision.
Did you remember
if I make this
her?
Decision, what might happen, right? And I'll look. If I get a bunch of, like, my awareness keeps getting drawn to my stomach, I know I shouldn't make that decision. But if for whatever reason it's in my chest, and I keep going there, then I make a decision. That's how I sit with something and meditate. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm doing this inventory where, like, this guy's going to do it, and
It's similar. I don't have any experience in what you're describing, but instead of writing I get to, say I do. I am.
I'm just never like affirmations.
People talk about affirmations and stuff. That's all vision work truly is. You're trying to affirm a vision for your life.
Like, look at her. Like, she's doing so much more than me.
Yeah, that's true.
And, like, that's...
There he is.
You know, it's all more about all these resolutions.